Captain's logs, dirty. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7.
Geronimo! Captain's log? We ain't got no kind of captain's log here. What kind of tree you think we have?
Captain's log. Stardate.
Stardate? What kind of bloody tree you think we have here? Ah, bloody hell. I don't have logs to call captain.
It seems we have found ourselves in a place where they chop trees down here. And somewhere in the final frontier.
Folks, welcome back to Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast here live on Fandom Podcast Network. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, along with my co-host, the one, the only, the amazing, the ever hardworking, let's just say the amount of stuff this gentleman does, I could rattle them off now for you, Star Wars writer for the official website, also for the magazine Star Wars Insider, Star Trek magazine, its official magazine itself, writes articles for that too, and for the site, also one hell of a busy podcaster, and one who is a Fantha tracker, that's right, head honcho, one of the many, working only on that website, Star Wars News in a single file, that is Fantha Tracks, amazing head honcho, Mark Newbold. Buddy, how are you?
I'm fine, I don't know how I have time to get out of bed in the morning, I've got too much to do.
Well, we're back, folks, making treks. We're going to chat some lower decks tonight. We're going to be chatting, who knows where it'll take us. We go down the rabbit hole in this show and look at and celebrate the amazing stuff of Star Trek. But, mate, first of all, how you been and what have you been up to?
Yeah, been good. Bit of a cough coming, it's that time of year, so but not the bad stuff, not what's knocking around at the moment, just a silly autumn cough, just to prove it. Yeah, busy, works good. It's that sort of end of year, sort of get towards the end of the year now already. Where's 2020 gone?
Yep.
So it's going good. Lots going on. Hasbro doing their PulseCon, and that's been busy. And obviously Mando Season 2's come in. Star Trek, which we're going to talk about in a minute, has just got so much going on. Yeah, everything's, even though the world's kind of upside down at the moment, it still feels like everything's sort of bubbling along. And I mean, I think last week, I think they started shooting Season 4 Discovery. We haven't seen Season 3 yet,
yeah.
You know. So things are moving on. There's a lot of Marvel news. And, it's all good. Busy, but, well, you know that.
Well, it always is. You know, that's the thing is, there's always something going on. I think without the, the theatrical stuff that's happening right now is in a limited capacity wherever it is in the world. A lot of theatrical releases being postponed again. Until obviously more audiences can get out there and check those out. Tenet was a really good example of, you know, something that's going to take us a bit of time to get out there. It didn't quite make the money they're after. Although it is, you know, M. Night Shyamalan's greatest film. No. Yes, folks, I'm going to say Christopher Nolan is literally now the new M. Night Shyamalan, where he's so into his insane little universes that he goes, pulls a twist at the end and goes, oh, what a twist. You know, and I think that's the thing is, it's dangerous because all of this complexity that he's trying to put in there, like Inception, but that was done well, has given us the Bond film that tried to out Bond, but I hate to say it, I don't think it's
right. Perfect. Not seen it yet. We're steering clear of cinema at the moment, so that's one that I'll wait until it's on sort of home video. But I did hear a lot of people said it looked amazing, the music was great, you know, everything about it was top-notch, but it didn't quite hang together as a film. It was a bit too smart for its own good. And like you say, the Shyamalan thing's a good, really good comparison point, because when you think back to Sixth Sense, Signs, you know, the early films that he did, Unbreakable, brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and then, yeah, it's easy to look back at them now and be a bit snarky, because, you know, once you know the twist to Sixth Sense, for example, it's the most obvious thing in the world when you watch it again. but then he sort of went, like you say, he sort of went off on his own little thing, and the next few Lady in the Water and the Village and stuff was a bit like, And then you get to The Happening, which is, you know, beautifully one of the worst movies in his Planet Nine from Outer Space level of bad, you know.
What about After Earth?
The grass is talking to me.
And there's After Earth. You know?
Oh, God, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. So he needs to come back with something pretty solid. It's in him. It's definitely in him.
That's a great director. Filmmaker. Oh, yeah.
I mean, yeah. I think you nailed it. Unbreakable and then Signs, probably that period was at his height. And then everyone caught on to the idea, oh, you're the what a twist guy. And then there was the MacGuffin guy, you know. And the same with, I think.
They should have got him into doing Indiana Jones films. George could never find the MacGuffin, could he? That was the thing.
No, that's right. Yeah, he goes, maybe aliens this time. I don't know, you know.
And I think that's the goal of it. Actually, believe it or not, speaking of George Lucas, while we're on that, before we head into Star Trek, folks, I've been rewatching the Blu-rays of The Godfather, and surprisingly, George worked on them. I had no idea that he worked on those films, but he did.
Yeah, I think because Coppola and Zoetrope and Lucas and Lucasfilm, which is 50 years old next year, were so sort of, they've worked in close proximity, you know, in the Bay Area, I think, and you know, a lot of connections there. So yeah, I know Lucas had worked on, well, he was heavily, I think, if I'm right, he was originally going to direct Apocalypse Now. You know, there's a lot of involvement there. And with Gary Kurtz, you know, they were very sort of tight units. You know, and obviously George worked for Coppola, I think, originally. So, yeah, I don't know what his deep involvement with Godfather is, but I do know that there are lots of connections between the two sort of camps of productions. And obviously at that point, Godfather, when was Godfather, 74?
72 and 74. So it would have been 72 for Godfather, 74 for Godfather Part 2. So he definitely worked on those
two.
There
you go, So that, and then Graffiti's in the middle, isn't it? So obviously Graffiti went crazy, you know, cost peanuts, made millions, you know. It must have been a good time to be either of those guys.
It's gold. I mean, a lot of people don't realise the Godfather itself, a lot of those scenes, particularly when they're going out to Waltz's mansion, and he goes, now you listen here, not going to get the movie, you know, and of course, you know, he goes out to the actual property, and a lot of those scenes are just literally second unit, directed by George Lucas, and they're just random people with the hats and wigs of Duvall and the guy that played Waltz and things like that, you know, like it's, a lot of those scenes, they just went, we've run out of time, we've run out of money, and Francis Ford Coppola himself was out of time to the point where let's get another director. You know, no one had faith in Francis.
Funny though, when you look back at that time period though, those guys, Lucas had all the trouble on THX in, what, 71?
71.
Spielberg obviously had Murders making Jaws, then went over budget on Close Encounters, then really went over budget on 1941 at the end of the decade. Coppola had all the trouble with the studio on Godfather. You know, those guys, I guess people like Scorsese, for example, doing it as cheap and gritty and sort of guerrilla style almost to make something like Taxi Driver. You know what I mean?
That
was probably the smart approach, but George couldn't do that in 77 for Star Wars. You know, and that was only because The Godfather was one of the most successful films ever that Coppola got the latitude he did, because I know he was known to be quite hard to work with, wasn't he?
Oh, he was. He was a tough guy to work with. I mean, the thing is, like, he would put things where they needed to be. But actually, I've got to say a big shout out to a certain bounty hunter out there, Gecko, Dominic Pace, on his YouTube channel. He has gone to the locations of the one, the only Godfather. And he's actually taken video, pictures, all that sort of stuff, the compound. He's gone to all the different places where you know, Don Vito Corleone was killed, things like that. So big shout out, Dominic, and let's have you on Lethal to chat about that one day, mate. I'll tell you what, a bit of a shout out there. But alas, we will get into Star Trek, folks, the final frontier here. But before we do that, we've got to let you folks know where to find this podcast, the radio channel that is on, and where to find us. So you can catch this show on Phantom Podcast Network, and that is, of course, on Podbean. So tally over to, of course, Google Play or the iTunes Store, and get yourself the app, Podbean, and, of course, subscribe to the Phantom Podcast Network. You'll find this show on there, you'll find Lethal Mullet Podcast, and you'll also find the, of course, Mullet Guild, the sister show to that one, all about Dune, which has Jonathan Hicks, master creator of role-playing games and much, much more. He's on the next 2 to 3 episodes, folks. It's massive. I just rolled tape and let him literally run out of air almost. He was just like, all right, so we've got this game, and then I tell you, it's all gold after that. I'm not going to spoil it. You have to check it out. There's a bit of Star Trek in there. There's a little bit of Star Wars. There's a little bit of Ravenloft and Dungeons and Dragons in that chat. You're going to love it. And I know Mark's grinning right now because he knows exactly what I'm talking about. The man is gold when it comes to that stuff. He's very passionate. So that'll be on that in the next couple of weeks, every Thursday. But you can catch that show on, of course, the FanPod Network on Twitter. So that's the handle at FanPod Network. And Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook and Instagram. Now, Mark, where can we catch you?
Well, if you're fast enough, you can catch me on Twitter at @prefect_timing. But generally, most places that have got @FanthaTracks by them, you'll see me sort of lurking around, looking for, you know, interesting news or compliments. I'm terrible. I'm like a dog chasing a biscuit. So, yeah. usually Twitter, which of course we all know is the cesspit of human interaction on planet Earth in the 21st century. But I just can't stay away, so that seems to be the place.
Well, I think we're all gravitating towards that because it feels like Facebook's starting to really die off now. It's a shadow of its former self. We all used to use Facebook as the place to be, but Twitter is alive and well. And, well, maybe. Maybe it's well, maybe it's not. And Instagram as well, folks. It really is. You catch me at The Lethal Mullen on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Check out the live shows that we do on there on the Facebook page. Just type in at The Lethal Mullen handle. All right, folks, we're going to get into it. Heading into the lounge now here, the Captain's Lounge. Swinging down some Romulan ale as we chat about the Lower Decks. Now, this is a great show. It actually has one of the stars of The Boys in it, Jack Quaid, son of Dennis and Meg Ryan. Okay. But at the end of the day, I've got to say, actually, he's really got the mannerisms of his parents when you think about it in those shows. But he's a fantastic actor.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good couple of parents to have if you're coming from a sort of an acting area, especially 80s and 90s, pre Botox, of course. Not talking about Mr. Quaid, but yeah, this show he suits this show so well. I mean, it's where do you start with Lower Decks? I mean, we talked. I'll tell you a connection, and but I would say by the time this comes out, then this episode will be out. On the latest episode of Making Tracks, we were talking. We had a guest question about Star Wars Detours.
Mm-hmm.
And the obvious comparison is between Detours and Lower Decks.
Yeah.
But Lower Decks is different in that Detours was obviously just riffing off Star Wars, having a bit of fun with Star Wars, especially the OT, just playing around with it. And I wish it had come out. Let's just stick it on Disney Plus. But the Lower Decks is special because it kind of feels like it should. Excuse me. It kind of feels like it should and almost does fit in to the general continuity, but it's skewed through this comedic lens. So my headcanon, and I don't know what the official line on Lower Decks is, but my headcanon is, this happens, this is what happens, but we're seeing it through the eyes of, like a Rick and Morty filter, you know, it's a comedy kaleidoscope look at what's actually happening. So I would say a lot of the touch points and the connections, certainly the characters, would all exist in the real sort of next-gen era. But what you see them do, almost like when we watch something like Star Wars Rebels, when you watch Sabine leaping around like Spider-Man, in the real physical 3D, there is a gravity world. She's not leaping 20 foot into the air. She's maybe jumping 10 foot into the air. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Stylized twist. So I've watched the first 5 episodes so far because we've not officially got it in the UK yet. So there are other means of getting hold of it.
We know how you did, folks. Just it's a legal way that he's done it. He's beamed himself over to the United States and watched it on the legal platform over there, and then beamed himself back. Yep. Thank you very much to the Enterprise E for the use of their transporter.
Couldn't have said it better. I'm loving it. I mean, the opening episode was great fun.
Mm-hmm.
Just everything. I know we're going to get into it in a minute. talk about the characters, but yeah, I'm very impressed with it so far, and I didn't think I was going to be as impressed with it as I've turned out to be.
No, that's right. Yeah, what's interesting is it's again using I think some of the Netflix shows that we're seeing out here in Australia, for example, the cartoons, that is using that sort of stylized style, Rick and Morty sort of style, which takes the essence of whatever the subject is. So in this case, Star Trek. But you know what it is. You know what those sort of feels are. And when I was first looking at it, kind of, I always, you know, see that animation is kind of like The Simpsons, kind of, you know. But it's even more stylized than that, I think.
Yeah, and also one thing they've done that's really clever, as we said, Rick and Morty is the obvious touch point because my mind's evolved, and it's definitely got that vibe about it. When we started watching the first episode, and you see the Cerritos, which looks totally like it should be in the background of First Contact when the Borg are attacking, it just completely fits in. excuse me. The opening credits. You see the opening credits, it's like, okay, they've done a beautiful blend of the Voyager credits, but there's the Cerritos crashing into an iceberg in space, and the warp missiles go, and all the silly stuff that they do. They turn up on a Borg attack on the Romulans, turn around and fly off. it's that next gen style music. It's completely the next gen TV series lettering. I mean, they've been very careful to duplicate that, replicate that perfectly. So they've done little grace notes like that and just touches that completely embed you in that, like I say, that post next gen era. But it's its own thing. It's just, it's really beautifully observed. I do like that a lot.
It's brilliant. I mean, again, it drags you into knowing what era you're in. You know, it's not just going, right, we're back in, you know, the old days. No, it's not. It's right smack in the middle of what you know it is. And I think that's why they've been so loyal to not only the music, the look, but, yeah, the font is bang on where it should be.
Yeah, it is. And also, one thing I liked, I when they announced it and they said that it was coming, I was pretty sure that it would be, again, like original, you know, like Kirk Spock McCoy era. Bit like the animated series from 73-74, but no, they've decided to do a next gen one, and when next gen was on television, there was so many talk of spin-offs, like the original series, the Gary Seven was basically a pilot for a series that never got made. The Loxana Troy stuff in next gen, they were always talking about a Troy, Loxana Troy series. Then they were talking about a Riker and Troy sitcom, which kind of feels like WandaVision.
In Zabi.
But they always talked, you know, and they always talked about an animated Next Generation series, which would have been voiced by the original Next Gen crew. But of course, that never happened, and now we've got Picard, and you know that there's more Next Gen people coming into that. So that's kind of covered. We had the four films as well, but that feels like that's covered. But this, sitting where it does, after, you know, sort of post-Nemesis, clearly it's post-Nemesis, and I've not checked the dates. I'm usually pretty hot on the dates. It's set in 2380, but I can't think off the top of my head when Next Gen finished. But nevertheless, you know, it's just in that nice area that's away from other stuff that happened. Yeah, it's just a nice...
Next Gen. 2370, I think.
It's not where you would think to put it, but it just sits there.
I was trying to think. I think it was 2370, somewhere around there. So it's probably about 10 to 15 years after, I would say. Which kind of set it about right. Oh, definitely. I mean, look, and I think you got such doom and gloom, I have to say, with the Borg stuff and with the Romulans in Picard. It's nice to have a show that's a little bit more, well, lighter, funnier, but also got a different cast.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, Discovery is the current, the flagship show for Star Trek, isn't it now?
Yeah.
You know, and it's a serious place to be. Obviously, they're leaping forward. We've got that coming soon. Goodness knows we'll be talking about that plenty on the show. And I can't wait for that. But yeah, you know, it's nice to just have a bit of fun with it, but not. It's having fun with it, and it's kind of ribbing it. But again, like on Making Tracks, we talked about Detours doing the original trilogy. That's bulletproof now. You can rip whatever you want out of the original trilogy. It's not going anywhere. It ain't going to change people's opinions. It's already made most of the money it'll ever make.
Yeah.
You know, it's secure in its place. And the original series of Star Trek is the same. You can kind of rip on that. But also, you know, Next Generation is and was as big and successful as the series that birthed it.
Oh, almost. Totally.
So Next Gen now, could totally have fun with this. And of course, there's that many more episodes, you know, like 178 Next Gen to 79 original, stuff like that, you know. So there's more stuff you can riff off, and Picard's back, and it's just everything. I think it's the right, whereas Detours was the wrong time to do it, Lower Decks is completely the right time to do it, because like you say, it's that light shade, you know, it's very well done.
It's just right. I mean, it's at the right time, and I think that's, you know, considering the plans that they have, whether they're still continuing with these other series, Nicholas Meyer's Khan series about Khan being on Seti Alpha 5, and the, you know, the whole thing is going to explain how he knows Chekhov. You know, Chekhov! You know, like, how the hell does he know Chekhov?
Yeah, exactly. Wasn't there in season one, wasn't it? They've tried to kayfabe their way around it, haven't they? Oh, but he was on the ship, you just didn't see him. No, he wasn't on the ship.
No, that's a cock-up. Yeah, that's a complete cock-up. The fact that he's, like, he's sitting there, he goes, "Nice to make your acquaintance, Mr. Chekhov." You know, the way he's just so gold.
Otherwise, he's holding out.
Yeah. And you can, if you look carefully, folks, you can see a little crane holding up, and he's like, "Ah!"
Gold, absolute gold. That's the sort of thing that they can. I mean, I've not seen the episode yet, but I know there's a Q episode where he turns up briefly. There's a DS9 flashback. You know, there's all these little things that are really neatly sort of woven in that they can really. I mean, Trek of all shows, more than Star Wars. I mean, way more than Star Wars, because with Star Wars, you couldn't riff off stuff that happened in a season 4, 15th episode of The Clone Wars, and the general Star Wars fan to go, "Ah, I get it." Whereas with Star Trek, you really can, because it's live action, because it's been around longer, because everyone's seen it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you could take an episode that was, you know, riffing off Night Terrors from season 4, and Geordi's got the funny eyes and he turns into that beaky alien creature. You could do a riff on that, because people go, "Oh, I get that, that's from that episode." You know what I mean? It's that sort of thing. I think I might have got my episode mixed up. It wasn't Night Terrors, but you know what I mean.
I know the one.
That sort of era. So that sort of stuff. You know, you can go off and do these weird little homages, if you like,
mm-hmm.
in Trek from a plethora of episodes. You know, you really could do some clever stuff with that.
The Final Frontier. These are the continuing voyages of
Soundbite from Australia with a mullet and some chap from Birmingham.
Join us as we voyage across the stars from Australia.
We ain't got no rockets over here. Where you going?
To Birmingham in England.
That's all right, mate. We got plenty over here, yeah?
Now get ready for the brand new Star Trek podcast, Making Treks, with your hosts, Adam O'Brien and Mark Newbold.
I think you've nailed one thing that needs to happen in any of these series, whether it's Lower Decks or, more rightly, Picard. John DeLancey needs to return.
You're not wrong. And obviously now, like all of us, you know, he's got older. We all get older. There's CG that can make him look younger. But even in Next Gen, when he turned up in Encounter at Farpoint and then again at All Good Things, you can see the 7 years of ageing on him, and his Q is an omnipotent creature who can appear however he wants. So if Q's decided he wants to look like a 60-plus-year-old guy, that's up to him. You know, but if they want to do a little shot where he's a bit younger, you know, the same, they can do it, you know, they can do it however they want. But the voice hasn't changed.
Yeah.
You know, and that sarcasm, you know, in his sort of attitude and the way he is just perfect. So yeah, more Q. We should have more Q in Voyager. I don't know if Q turning up in Discovery would work. It didn't work in DS9. It did work in Voyager. You know, I mean, Sisko had no time for Q. Just wasn't his. That was not
it's too serious. Too serious. You know, and I think there's Janeway
had early days DS9, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the thing, is like, you know, it's much darker sort of Star Trek, as we've mentioned in a previous podcast. It's, you know, very down and rooted in what it's war, basically, in that period. Whereas if you got it on Janeway, you know, she's a bit more open and she has a sense of humor. She's tough. In some ways I think Janeway's tougher than Sisko, but she knows where to draw the line, and she's inquisitive about Q when Q's on there.
Yeah. I mean, like I say, she doesn't give any. I mean, there's a whole podcast episode just talking about Jane.
Yeah.
And her attitude to stuff, you know, the way she was. But her attitude with Q was. I mean, it was also an almost a playful, almost. almost a playful, it was as near to playful as you could get, because Picard wasn't standing for any of that, you know, and that relationship grew over those years, which is why All Good Things was so clever, because I think Picard felt like, after Tapestry especially, I think Picard felt like he kind of knew Q, and then Q really threw a spanner in the works, was like, you got way ahead of yourself, mate. You know, it's 70 years to you, it's nothing to me. You know, humanity's still on this original sort of exploration thing that I talked about in All Good, in the Encounter at Farpoint. Whereas I think Kate Mulgrew and John Delancey are quite pally anyway. So I think there's a slightly different relationship there. She almost knew how to play Q. I don't think Picard ever quite knew how to play him, and Sisko certainly didn't.
Idiot, no idea. And I think that's the thing is, yeah, we're talking about very seasoned soap actor, John Delancey. You know, going right back to his early days on, I think he played a villain on Days of Our Lives. I can remember working night shift for years and coming home in the morning, sleeping all morning, and then I didn't watch the news. And when I woke up about 1 p.m. in the afternoon, and it would be Days of Our Lives. And we had actors who were part of Robotech, the voice actors who were playing villains alongside, you know, all right, Capitano. You know, he was doing his thing. And then in comes Ben Dixon from Robotech.
Right, what we got to do? You know, and all those.
And you go, hey, I know those guys. You know, like, and they were on those episodes. So it was always fun to wake up, have your breakfast, and watch, you know, your favourite characters just literally go after Bo and Hope.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to the Fandom Podcast Network and all of the other awesome shows we have to offer. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture news podcast. Blood Kings, our Highlander podcast. Couch Potato Theater, our podcast celebrating our favorite movies. Time Warp, the Fandom Flashback podcast discussing a year in movies and our favorite pop culture topics. End Zone, the NFL podcast. Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast. Union Federation, our Star Trek and Orville podcast. Hair Metal, the 80s and early 90s rock metal podcast. Type 40, our Doctor Who podcast. Lethal Mullet, a 1980s and 90s action film podcast. What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast. And our newest show, Making Treks, a new Star Trek podcast with a deep dive into the final frontier with hosts Mark Newbold and Adam P. O'Brien. You can enjoy all of these great Fandom Podcast Network shows on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. Fandom Podcast Network is also on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. You can also find us on Facebook under Fandom Podcast Network. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter under Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.
All right, folks, that's all we've got this week here on, of course, Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast on the Fandom Podcast Network, coming to you live from the UK and Australia for your pleasure, listening to all of us chat about the final frontier. Joining us next week, of course, again, is my dear co-host, Mark Newbold, and we'll be going through more chat about Lower Decks, and, of course, we're going to be chatting about Enterprise and The Next Generation and, of course, Deep Space Nine. And somehow in between all of that, we will also chat about the Kelvin universe, the J.J. Abrams verse, all about the early years in the alternate universe of Star Trek. And that's all here on the one, the only, Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast on FPN. Make sure to follow us on, of course, at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and also follow Mark himself on Twitter at @prefect_timing. Check out the show also on FPN, that is Fandom Podcast Network on Podbean, at FanPod Network on Twitter, and of course, fpn.podbean.com. All right, folks, we'll catch you next time here, searching the wild skies of the final frontier. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.
Scotty, make sure we're hitting work. Bad. We have to find Khan. If you can hear us out there in SETI Alpha 5, 6, 7, 9, did I miss 8?
Oh, come on, I say. We'll pay for the cutting now.
Jim, you might not be wanting to go to the warp 8 there, Jim.